This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. Back in 2007, Congress funded and the president signed into law a new kind of research organization, the Advanced Research Projects Agency Energy, or ARPA-E. You had heard of DARPA? This was ARPA-E. And its mission is to back energy technologies that are too risky for investors but offer a potentially huge payoff if they work. The agency has gambled on flywheels, compressed air energy storage, lithium air batteries, even wind energy kites. Cheryl Martin is deputy director of ARPA-E, where they're funding some cutting-edge ideas like new batteries in the hopes of finding the next big thing in energy. She joins us here in New York. Welcome to Science Friday, Dr. Martin.
I'm glad to be here, Ira.
Exciting time to be involved in energy research?
It is a very exciting time. Energy's finally cool again.
You know, because we're always looking for new inventions in energy and whatever, and we come up with all kinds of new ideas. Let's get into some things that are happening out there. For example, the sulfur ion battery. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the bigger picture is that everybody's kind of trying to come up with batteries that have very high energy density. We're trying to go after something that can help us when you think about fuel in our car engines, right? Lots of energy packed into that engine. And so as you think about today's batteries, their issue is that they're not as energy dense. Mm-hmm. Just think about it, how much energy you can get into a certain space. And when you look at what's out there that could be really game-changing, lithium sulfur comes to mind. It's literally, along with lithium air, the highest energy density you could get.
And how far, what is the process that would take that from just the basic research to actually making a lithium air battery?
Yeah, well, lithium air technology is not new. It's been around for a long time. And it's got some great advantages. It's cheap, it's abundant, and it's got this very high energy density. When you go to put it into a battery, some of the challenges are often that as it starts to work and cycle, the battery, parts of it dissolve. And so it literally just loses its life.
I hate that when it happens.
It's a problem.
So lithium sulfur does have a promise, but it still has
challenges. But there's some really cool breakthroughs out there.
Give us an idea.
We've funded a couple. So if you want to get rid of the whole concept of having it dissolve, make it solid. So the whole idea of could you put a solid – the liquid is called the electrolyte.
Right.
So could you do a solid electrolyte? Mm-hmm. So we've funded some effort in that area. There's others out there who've made some progress in those. So that's really tremendously promising. The idea of, you know, you don't have to have an organic solvent. You could do water. And so it changes some of those dynamics as well. We've got one funded like that. Mm-hmm. So I think all of the real change in technology advance in nanotechnology, solid states, have really opened up researchers' eyes. And if you look at a graph of innovation in the lithium sulfur space over the past 10 years, it's a proverbial hockey stick, which is great for innovation. Mm-hmm. A lot of people are out there inventing.
I remember going out to, years ago, going out to Princeton and watching the tokamak out there. That was a fusion experiment that was going on. And I said, how do you power this thing? And they said, oh, you have to see this. This is a giant flywheel. A flywheel? Yeah, flywheels turn real big flywheels. They turn, they have a tremendous amount of energy stored in these flywheels. And I remember actually going out to California in the 70s and seeing cars that had experimental flywheels there. And are you working? Is that being resurrected, the flywheel idea again?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you're right. Flywheel technology, again, has been around for a long time. Actually, you know, right now in the state of New York, there's a 20-megawatt installation of flywheels. There's actually one that I think they're breaking ground on install today in Pennsylvania of a new flywheel facility. People are interested in flywheels for exactly the reason you said. They start, stop their effect really quickly.
Yeah.
So if all of a sudden a cloud comes across your solar panel, this flywheel can kick on really fast and balance out the electricity. And so that's a real intriguing advantage to them. It's just taken a while. I do think the utilities are very, very interested in these demonstrations that we're seeing. I think are going to definitely help other people make the decision. But we're working on the next generation.
Tell us.
The whole question of, can you, you know, the real question, how much more energy density can these things store?
Right.
The more, the better.
Right.
And so our belief is that by changing the materials, so going to composite materials for these things and being able to get them thin enough, strong enough, resilient enough that you can then levitate them and float them to spin them, will give us a, you know, 5-8 times kick.
So there's no ball bearings with a spindle in the middle anymore.
Well, you know,
it's just levitating it magnetically and spinning it.
That's the idea.
Wow.
And, you know, and I think those types of things, they're already quite robust, but I think you take things to another level if you can get high levels of storage. So, yeah, exciting times.
1-800-989-8255 is our number. We're talking about new energy technologies with Dr. Cheryl Martin. It's unusual for me to talk to an official from Washington here in New York in our studios. And you're here because you had a special visit.
Absolutely. You know, RPE does awards to universities, small businesses, and large businesses all over the country. And so I was in town yesterday for New York Energy Week, which is actually at both a state and a citywide celebration of all that's going on in energy.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were up at CUNY, City University, and celebrating their spin out of a new small company called Urban Electric Power. And their technology is a battery technology that you'd use not for a vehicle, but actually in a building that would allow you to manage the peak load of the mm-hmm. building. And so it's exciting to see a technology move from the lab out into the market where real customers are going to start to try it.
I think it's also surprising to see how much solar energy has caught on, and people installing solar in their own homes, and it's just terrific.
Yeah, I think the advances in all of these technology areas make things that people wouldn't have thought possible years, you know, just a few years ago,
mm-hmm.
Seem very, very possible.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of very possible and very unusual new things, I want to bring in another guest who's created a tiny battery the size of a grain of sand using a 3D printer. Is that's correct? Jennifer Lewis is the Vice Professor of Biological Inspired Engineering at Harvard in Cambridge. She's here in our New York studio. Is that right? You made a tiny grain of sand battery?
Yes, we did. My group, in collaboration with Shen Dillon and sponsored by the Department of Energy, focused on three-dimensional printing of these types of batteries. And the concept is to integrate form and function to create integrated devices for the first time.
Now, it does seem like and so what would you do with a tiny battery the size of a grain of sand? What uses are?
So one of the drivers for that is maybe threefold are the things that we're thinking about. Autonomous sensor arrays, which are very small sensors that can harvest and then use the battery to store and sense in the environment and then ping a single signal back to.
You mean like I could swallow it or something like
that? You could in some cases, but I think this is more of an environmental type sensor platform. Micro robots and biomedical devices. So coming back to that first example.
And you know, batteries seem to be the key to everything happening, right? Anything electric, we've got to have the batteries for.
If you ask a researcher in battery technologies, they will absolutely tell you that.
Yeah.
No, but it is true. They're so important.
And certainly I would say that our batteries are 1,000 times smaller than the smallest rechargeable lithium-ion batteries that you can find commercially. So if you think about that, just like Cheryl was saying, this opens up tremendous space for innovation at these very small land scales.
Can anybody print one like you did on a 3D printer?
Well, not with commercial 3D printers. We've custom designed and built our own 3D printers, as well as the inks, the functional inks that allow you to print the anode and cathode in interdigitated fashion. The interesting thing about our batteries is they have feature sizes that are smaller than a single strand of hair, and as you've already mentioned, they fit on the size of a sand grain.
Wow. What about in general printing batteries? Could we print, if nothing that size, can you go online and get a design for a 3D battery if you want to print one?
So I think this is going to open up this design space. And although we focused on micro batteries as the first demonstration, just to really push the envelope and show what 3D printing can do in terms of functional devices, this can be done over large areas, large volumes, and really interesting form factors beyond just planar type devices. So, yes, you know, I eventually imagine that you're going to be able to do that. And then in terms of, you know, really rapidly enhancing the design cycle, mm-hmm. this is a great platform for doing that.
Yeah, because there's a lot of talent out there, right?
Absolutely. And I think the whole idea, once someone demonstrates something possible, everybody else starts thinking about how they could use it to solve the problem they have. Mm-hmm. And so I think we're going to see continual innovation. Just asking the guys back at RPE about Jennifer's invention, they were like, well, she could use this type of electrode. They had all kinds of ideas to jump in and, you know,
innovate. You crowdsource this stuff and the ideas come back.
Yeah. That's part of this, right, is to get people, you know, aware of what's going on. And there's a lot of ideas out there. We don't lack for ideas. We simply, I think, lack for the connection to the problem that they can solve.
How about lacking for the money? I mean, how much is RPE funded now compared to how it used to be and where it's going in the future?
So RPE, as you already said, we're a four-year-old agency. We've funded $770 million worth of projects, 285 of them so far. Our annual budget this year is about $250 million. And so, you know, for the project size we do, you know, $3 million is a good size project to demonstrate what's possible.
But your next year's budget is much lower than that, is it not?
The next year's budget isn't set yet. So we're in the budget. We're in the budget process.
Very diplomatic. I can see why you work in Washington.
I've only been in Washington for 2 years.
I'd also like to point out, in terms of the funding, DOE has 46 Energy Frontier Research Centers, and the work that I was doing was part of one of those centers. And so that's another way to get innovation out into the popular space.
Speaking of the popular space, let's go to William in Philomish, Oregon, William?
Yeah, it's Philomish. I was wondering if you could talk about graphene batteries or like carbon nanotubes for electrodes.
Yeah, certainly there's a lot of work in this area for anodes because the idea is to try to create both cathodes and electrodes to allow to have this higher energy density, as Cheryl was talking about. This is really the holy grail of battery space, both energy density and power density.
Graphene is this miraculous sort of carbon, right?
It is. It's a molecularly thin single layer of carbon in graphitic form.
And incredibly strong.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
It's conductive. You can make things with it.
Yep, that's correct.
Can you 3D print with it?
Yes, in fact, we have.
Yeah?
So we've made 3D architectures out of graphene-based inks.
Wow. That's it. That's very interesting. What would you, if I gave her whole budget to you, let me give RPE's budget to you, or let me give you $50 million of it, which might be what her whole budget is next year. What would you do with it?
I would say thank you for the best Christmas present ever. But no, what we would seriously do with that kind of money is really rapidly advance 3D printing in this functional integrated electronics and battery space. I think the possibilities of 3D printing are to go well beyond just printing plastic, which is largely what 3D printers are doing right now. Mm-hmm. And we've developed a palette of inks, conductive inks, these battery anode and electrode inks. And I think actually there is unlimitless possibilities.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. This is Science Friday from NPR. I'm Ira Flatto talking about new energy technologies. Let me ask you, I'll give you the blank check question since I gave your budget away to her. If you had a blank check and you could do anything with it, any size, where would you invest it? How would you invest it? What would you put it into?
Oh, gosh. Well, RPE invests in everything from, you know, new ways of visioning plants so that they could be much more fuel-like and less plant-like, to no rare earth components of magnets and motors, so we could get out of that problem, to power electronics, and could we route the grid just like we route the internet?
Let's talk about the grid a little bit. How much does the grid need to be modernized, and what it certainly would need?
Yeah, well, I mean, if you ask pretty much anybody in the electricity industry, right, they would say, you know, if Alexander Graham Bell came in and saw the cell phone, he wouldn't know what to do with it. But if Edison came in and saw the power grid, he would know how to fix it.
And so,
right? I mean, and so there's a lot of pieces of technology that have not been updated. I mean, we've done tremendous amounts to grow the electric grid. But there's a tremendous amount of innovation needed, and it's exciting to see everything from, again, software. We could route the grid. We could not lose so much energy in just moving electrons around.
And if we had more electric cars, they could be part of the grid, could they not? Help store energy in the electric batteries in these cars.
Well, I think the whole idea of storage on the grid is important, yeah. right? When you're generating renewable energy in times when you don't need it, you could store it. If you're talking about balancing loads on the grid, you could store it. If you're simply talking about resilience, mm-hmm. All those things are helpful. So certainly electric vehicles having batteries in them, it's the battery component that counts. Mm-hmm. But absolutely.
Does any of ARPA's money go into nuclear power research?
Not today. The way we look at areas is, you know, given our budget size, is $30, $40 million going to make a difference? Is shining a light of that size in the space going to make a difference? We could. We mm-hmm. just haven't seen any good ideas mm-hmm. that fit that budget constraint.
Mm-hmm. And Dr. Lewis, where do you go now with your tiny little battery? Well, I don't mean literally, but where do you
sure.
move forward?
I think, you know, one example might be in the hearing aid industry. So right now, hearing aids, 98% of the plastic pieces that you have for molding to your ear or behind your ear are 3D printed, but none of the electronics are.
Right. Well, let me back that up for a second.
Yeah.
90% are already 3D printed.
That's correct, because you can take a mold of the ear and then just laser print these very quickly. But then you have to hand pot all of the electronics in the batteries. Batteries have to be changed every 7 days in these kinds of devices. And so we think about an elderly person trying to do that where they don't have the dexterity. Wonder right. if you could have a rechargeable battery, just like your cell phone every night, plug it in or put it on an inductively charged charger by your bedstand. It would be tremendous, I think.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's where, you know, is there a patent on that, or is anybody setting up companies to do that?
It's funny that you should ask that, because just this week before we came onto the show, we filed the patent.
Ira, you were an inspiration for the patent.
I've just been around doing this too long. That's
right.
Yeah, well, that's the kind of thing that drives technology, is having a patent on it and
getting
it into production. But it's always then years before we see something that's going to turn
correct.
Out.
That's yeah. correct.
Well, I want to thank you for taking time to be with us today. I know you have to go. Jennifer Lewis is the Vice Professor of Biologically Inspired Engineering. I like that. Biologically Inspired Engineering at Harvard University in Cambridge, and your battery project is not funded by RPE, is it? No. We
have funding from RPE, though.
You do have funding. We're going to take a break. This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. We're talking this hour about next-generation batteries and all kinds of next-generation energy techniques and 3D printing of batteries. Fascinating. Future of Energy with Dr. Cheryl Martin, Deputy Director of the Advanced Research Projects Agency /Energy, whatever. It's RPE, you know that. I'd like to bring on two other guests now who in their spare time have been splitting water to make hydrogen fuel using something you might have in your kitchen cabinet. They are twin sisters, Shilpa and Shweta Iyer, recent graduates of Comsawag High School in Port Jefferson Station, that's in New York, and winners of the Proton On-Site Scholarship and Innovation Program. Welcome to Science Friday.
Thank you.
I watched your video on up there on the internet. Quite fascinating.
Thank you.
Let's talk about your winning project. You found a way of using cheap, abundant soybeans to extract hydrogen from water. Tell us about that a little bit. Choose up who's going to talk.
I'm Shilpa.
Go ahead. Sure.
We wanted something that was going to be cheap and environmentally friendly. And right now, industrially, to produce hydrogen, they use a platinum catalyst, which makes it not an economical option for widespread use. So we decided to go into our backyard and see if we can find something green that would possibly work as a catalyst for hydrogen production.
Mm-hmm. And you found soybeans?
Yep. We went in there with the shoebox and we tried all different parts of the plant. We tried the leaves, the fruit, the seeds, and we hit upon peanuts, which showed some promising activity, and we hypothesized that maybe it was because of the protein content in peanuts. So from there, we decided to try soybeans.
Mm-hmm. And so you came up with a way of making the electrodes out of soybeans.
Yep, that's right.
And how much cheaper is that than the way the electrodes are made now?
Well, this is Shweta, and actually it's much cheaper. Platinum catalysts right now are extremely expensive because per ounce, platinum is around $1,600, whereas our catalysts made of soybeans and molybdenum are much less expensive. Soybeans are nominal, and molybdenum is only 40 cents per ounce.
40 cents an ounce versus platinum, which Wow. And so you made the catalyst, and you're able to, I saw it on the video, to extract hydrogen out of the water. It's very simply.
Yes.
And so, as we talked about it before, have you got a patent on your project yet?
We do have a patent. We filed a U.S. provisional patent for our catalyst.
Mm-hmm. And have you got a company interested in it yet?
Yes, there is a company, Nagarjuna, who contacted the Brookhaven National Laboratory, and they're interested in our research.
Mm-hmm. How did you get interested in science? Being twins, you grew up together. Did you both find the interest at the same time?
Yep. Being twins, we're really close, and we've been able to share a lot of our interests and passions. And we were always interested in energy research, mm-hmm. and we wanted to see if we can contribute something to the effort to find something viable for future use. So we decided to try hydrogen because it's the most abundant element, and we wondered why it wasn't being used as fuel.
Mm-hmm. Now, I understand that you spent a summer in India, and then you came back to New York and saw a lack of energy options. Especially, you were influenced when the New York area was hit by Hurricane Sandy.
That's correct. When we were in India, we actually witnessed daily power outages, and also there are a lot of unreliable energy sources besides that. And coming back to the U.S., where we thought we'd have energy at our disposal, we were hit by Hurricane Sandy and realized that the energy crisis is really a worldwide problem.
Wow. And so where do you go from here? Are you going to a big energy college? Is someone going to snap you ladies up?
Well, I'm Shweta, and I'll be going to Stony Brook University to study chemical engineering.
Uh-huh. You can say hello to Alan Alda while you're there.
I will.
That's where he is, talking about science and electrical engineering. That's terrific. And you're going to be hopefully refining what you're doing. Could you take it another step further or add to it?
Yes. I'd like to continue to try to research other methods of hydrogen production and to perhaps improve on our current catalyst by using different types of biomass or different types of metal.
Mm-hmm. Well, Shilpa, where are you headed?
I'll be going to Cornell University in the fall.
Dress warmly. No,
I will.
I want to thank you both for taking time to be with us today, and the best of luck to you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Shilpa and Shweta Iyer are recent graduates of Comsawag High School in Port Jefferson Station. That's in Long Island, and winners of the Proton On-Site Scholarship and Innovation Program. Quite interesting, Dr. Martin, to see youngsters so interested.
Absolutely, Ira. I think the really great thing, they picked out what's the real issue to how do you find something abundant and cheap. And so I think it's a long way to go till we'll probably have a catalyst from the soybeans out there. But they were going in the right direction. And to think high school kids, it's awesome. It's inspiring, hopefully, to a lot of other kids to say that they can, go out there and invent.
Yeah, we talk about maker fairs and things like that all the time, and there is no shortage, is there, of ideas, as you said.
Absolutely not. And sometimes it's the untrained eye that brings a new question that everybody with their assumptions about what's possible hasn't asked lately. And maybe this is the perfect catalyst, maybe it's not, but it's a piece of the questioning we have to do if we're really going to solve this energy problem. Mm-hmm. So exciting to hear their story.
Mm-hmm. Here's a tweet from Maggie Ryan Stanford, who says, it seems like everywhere you look these days, young women are kicking major science butt, and it's the dreamiest. It is. Young women are getting interested.
Absolutely. Yesterday morning, as part of New York Energy Week, I was uptown, and we had, 150, 200 women in the room to honor four women from government in New York that have made tremendous contribution. And to see that many women across the sector, I mean, as I said, energy's cool, and there are women making a big difference.
Mm-hmm. And being a geek is hot now.
So. It is. Yeah. Always has been, though.
Oh, yes, we geeks know that. We're trying to become Benjis, which actually is after Benjamin Franklin, because he was a geek, but he was also interested in the arts and music.
Exactly.
And things like that.
So. Renaissance man himself.
Yeah, Benjis. Let's go to Benji Bob in Chicago. Hi, Bob. Welcome to Science Friday.
Thank you very much. Talking about energy or abundant, cheap, and young women in energy, what can you tell me about energy storage? I see Danielle Fong, I think it is, from LightSail, doing stuff with compressed air for energy storage. Are we doing much work on that?
Yes, certainly you bring up a good point. There's a lot of ways to think about storage. There's traditional batteries, there's flywheels that we just talked about, and compressed air energy storage. So you'll see it, CAES. And there's a number of groups out there. LightSail is one of them, General Compression. Again, the trick is you basically take air and you can compress it, you know, for example, into an underground cavern. You capture the energy, and then when you release it, you get it back. And the trick is, you know, how do you do that without losing the energy, just like in batteries and flywheels? And so we are continuing to look at all those options.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for calling, Bob.
You're welcome.
Is the drop in price of photos of photo panels, solar cell panels, is that a good thing? I mean, it's almost like saying, well, they're very cheap now, everybody can use them. But on the other hand, you might say, well, we're not making a profit on selling any of these things.
You know, I think any type of technology goes through these periods where something's very expensive, it reaches a tipping point, it becomes much cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
So it gets more adoption, as you said earlier, right? It's on a lot of people's roofs right now.
Mm-hmm.
It gives us the, you know, the people, the experts in installation and all those things who are out there. There's an industry
right.
developing. Well, now the next generations of technology can come along and use those channels to market
mm-hmm.
to bring more improved and better technologies. So I think ultimately it's a good thing.
How do you at ARPA-E know when something is a hit, when you have something that's a success?
Well, since we're four and DARPA's 50, I figure that all we need is the Internet of Energy and we can declare victory and go home. But until then, you know, I think we're going to have to – the path of commercialization and energy is a longer time.
Mm-hmm.
But we look at in the 3 years that we nominally have projects, what happens at month 37?
Right.
Are they moving on to spin out a company? Are they moving on to a partnership with a bigger company? Are they in a test bed with the military? The military is a very big user of,
right.
of energy.
Right.
And so that's how we know if things are moving forward.
You compare yourself with DARPA, which is a good comparison. But DARPA has a huge advantage over you in that they have the D in their name. They're the defense, right? And you would seem this these days that the Pentagon could get anything it wanted if it just asked Congress, because they throw things at it that doesn't want. And if you just say we're going to make it for the military, you can get funding.
Well, the thing for you know, yes, DARPA has a D, but the military has a big E called energy that's mm-hmm. a very big expense for them. And so certainly we spend a lot of time working with the military on their needs. They have needs, you know, far afield. They have isolated bases. They have lots and lots of challenges, right?
Mm-hmm. We've had the Secretary of the Navy on here, and
oh,
a few of his scientists, and he seems to be the greenest guy anywhere, trying to save energy, to save lives in the military.
Well, absolutely, right? You have a system where you're out in the field, you're isolated from your supply chains, or they could mm-hmm. potentially be dangerous. And so you want to make sure that you're using as little energy as possible for everything that you do. You want to make sure if you had a chance to generate your own electricity that you can.
Right.
Subtle things. Running a, you know, a generator is not as cheap as running
as
running a solar panel.
Yeah, and it takes many material to bring that fuel to run that generator, which puts people's lives
in exactly.
Different.
And so that's why they're very, very interested in energy as well, which is great because the interests are very well aligned with the everyday consumer.
Dr. Martin, we've run out of time. We'll have to have you back. Thank you very much for taking time to be with us today.
Thank you so much.
Cheryl Martin is Deputy Director of the Advanced Research Projects Agency, Energy, or ARPA-E, in Washington, D.C.